Hi, Mike. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Chris. How are you?
Doing excellent. Thank you. Beautiful day. Everything's wonderful.
Certainly is.
So today we're going to talk a little bit about commissioning, that process that we have to go through before we can run a dyno. But do you want to talk a little bit about why we need commissioning?
Sure. I think the main reason, or one of the main reasons, is to validate our equipment in its working environment to make sure everything's been integrated properly and at the end of the day runs as it was designed to meet the customer expectations.
Okay, so looking at this from both from a sort of a handover point of view, to hand over our equipment to a customer, but also to make sure that the customer is going to get good data.
That at the end of the day is the end result that you're looking for, because the test cell is basically producing data and you want it accurate and repeatable.
Right. So this is a process that everyone has to go through to set everything up. Well, what do we need in place before it can start? Because it's obviously involves an engine running and operating the dyno, but prior to that, there are some things I can imagine need to be in place and verified.
We'll use the example of a single dyno with a test engine and a drive shaft or drive line in between. Okay, so we, Prude, have just sold a dynamometer drive shaft engine to a customer. The customer, we at our facility, test it within our factory to make sure it meets our design requirements and performance requirements for the individual products, the dyno itself, obviously with a drive line, a prop shaft or a drive shaft that has been tested as well along with it. So once we prove that out, then we ship it to the customer site. Now the customer sites can be a much bigger picture, much bigger challenge with all the facility requirements to make sure that one, the dynamometer is installed correctly. That means the drive line as well is aligned properly with the engine. But the main thing is you have to have all the facilities plumbed in to the equipment, all the equipment installed prior to the engineer coming on site to do the actual commissioning.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the installation and preparation, because the alignment is certainly a big deal for a turboshaft engine spinning at, let's say, you know, 20,000 or 5,000 RPM. Presumably for some low-speed engines, is alignment as significant in terms of data accuracy or smooth running of the dyno?
Yeah, it's all relative, but alignment, whether it's spinning at 30,000 RPM or 5,000 RPM, is still critical.
Yeah.
Obviously, when you're spinning at 30,000 RPM, you're really trying to get it really, really, really tight as far as what alignment you're setting it up for. And yeah, it is more critical the higher speed you go, but you still can't say it's not critical even at a low speed, because it can do damage if it's not aligned properly. It can wear things out quickly to where damage occurs from it.
Okay, so we want to have the mechanical setup signed off by whoever's installed this dyno and whoever's installed the engine.
Yeah, and that's a key thing. Out of the years I've spent inside test cells, there's a dividing line between who does what. So sometimes, depending upon the customer, they may elect to do some of the commissioning, simpler commissioning efforts themselves, or they may actually do the whole thing themselves. It's not our recommendation, but typically we want to have as much involvement with the commissioning as possible. But again, there's a certain aspect that the customer is going to do and a certain aspect that the supplier is going to do. And it's that understanding during the quoting phase and when we sell the equipment or the commissioning of who's going to do what.
Yeah, and there are some customers who've had multiple test cells, and if they're installing another version of the same test cell, then it would be not as difficult to install and or commission that.
Right. You've been through the process before. In the companies that we've worked here and in our prior lives, they've had staffs like that. They've had a support network internally that was capable of doing a lot of the upfront work prior to a commissioning engineer coming on site. But typically, if I ever bought a dynamometer, especially a new dynamometer, I would be utilizing the manufacturer to do the final commissioning at a bare minimum inside my test cell.
Okay, so from your experience, Mike, at this pre-commissioning stage, what sort of things have gone wrong?
Well, the biggest thing is being prepared and it usually should start a lot earlier than most times that it does get started, meaning that, you know, you're thinking it'll only take a week of preparation before the commissioning engineer comes out. But if you're talking about installation of equipment, you've got to consider the various sources you have to do that installation. So it may be a smaller company where you maybe have your first test cell or two test cells where you've got one person that does a lot of it, so you have more control over it. Or it may be a larger organization where you have union trades that are involved with moving equipment versus electrical installation, a different person for that, mechanical. It can involve a group of people. So the biggest thing and the challenges are is making sure the cell is prepared. And a lot of the time, this is the most critical phase of commissioning is preparedness. Because if everything's properly set up and checked out prior to the commissioning engineer coming out, it makes a huge difference. The challenge is getting it done on time, getting it right.
Well, I can imagine that then communication between the commissioning engineer and the test team on the site is pretty important, so they can talk through where it stands in this process of preparation, so that when the commissioning engineer comes out, he's got a known situation to walk into under ideal circumstances.
Yeah, under ideal circumstances, you've got a single point of contact at the customer site. So that's the person the commissioning engineer is going to be working with through the entire process. So that's the go-to person with questions and answers. And they may have other people supporting them, but you have one person. It becomes convoluted when there's multiple people involved and there's no clear person given direction or making decisions, and it makes it a little bit harder to get through it. But we come to the site with a plan, a specific plan. We go through our checks. We double check things that the customer may have had on their checklist or something that they had to check, such as they're getting the right voltage, the right pressures from a water perspective, or even compressed air. We double check a bunch of stuff from when it comes to static checks before we even power anything up as well. So it's quite a comprehensive list we go through, but the customer has obligations to as well. So for example, we'll use the engine on test. So they're going to provide a engine that we can check our equipment out as a complete system in their test cell. That means the engine they install is what I call a slave engine, has to be suitable to make sure or get close to what the capability of our equipment is.
Okay, but we're just going back to the communication a little bit first, because you said there the commissioning engineer will verify some of the details around that, such as voltage and, you know, air supply, etc. But presumably alignment, for example, would have to be taken a report or really taken as true, because until you run the engine, you can't tell if it's aligned. So that we need to go on some reports that are in place and the operator can verify that.
Absolutely correct. So to clarify, this is a heavily documented procedure
right. When
it comes to commissioning, because there's a lot of things that need to be checked and measured and recorded. And one of them is alignment. That is one critical path or one critical part of commissioning to make sure that it is aligned properly. Because if you start to experience problems like vibration, you're going to go right back to, was it aligned properly? And you're going to double check that. And that's the type of thing you don't want to have to do. So again, in preparedness, if you do all these things that are specified, it makes life a lot simpler inside the test cell when you start to commission.
Right. So we've got a situation now where we know the test operator, the operator knows the commissioning engineer. They're talking about the process, the test plan here. We've gone through checklists of things that have been looked at and signed off. And I suppose the next stage then is to work out how we set the limits of the engine operation and set the signals so that we know whether we're operating safely or not.
Good point and very important point. The number one thing that the commissioning engineer is going to make sure of, even though it's part of the pre-commissioning before the engineer gets in there, is the safety string or the safety circuit. Their safety system, however you want to refer to it as. But at a bare minimum, there has to be a safety or e-stop, emergency stop strategy when operating a test cell. That means as part of the safety mechanism during the commissioning and thereafter, after it's commissioning, you need to have a way automatically and manual of being able to detect an issue and either manually shutting down the test cell very quickly or automatically via limits, setting pressures, setting speeds, setting vibration limits. So when it recognizes, when the recording instrumentation or the data acquisition system recognizes a problem, it automatically has been programmed to shut down or come down in speed and load or whatever that case may be. But the e-stop circuit is the thing that is checked and double-checked and sometimes triple-checked to make sure it's operating 100% correctly, repeatable, without fail. If you hit the emergency stop button, it brings things down. Because in commissioning, a lot of different things can happen that you may not have planned for, but you always can count on the ability to shut things down in an emergency.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because that's not going to be, the commissioning engineer isn't going to have control over the shutdown process. The commissioning engineer will want to know that that capability exists of shutting down, but it's going to be down to the operator, the test cell operator, to understand the protocols and the likely sequence so that they're not surprised.
Right. And the uniqueness about it is we may develop a system that has an e-stop circuit built into it, and the customer may already have an existing e-stop system. It's a matter of integrating the two e-stop systems together. So it's part of that, what I call a string, as part of that system that the customer has. So the operator and the engineer know that the red button means, in case of emergency, hit it, and it will shut things down as it was programmed 100% of the time.
Yeah, because without that in place, you're going to be pretty nervous about operating the cell, because you're going to be pushing the limits with a commissioning situation. You're going to run to what, the highest speed, highest load to check out the control under those conditions.
Right. And typically, after you start running, so for example, for the first time that you start the engine, you're going to start off with probably a no-load condition at low speed. Okay, and that circumstance, dependent upon the commissioning plan specific to the customer, you may start off with hitting the e-stop button to verify things shut down. So you're shutting it down in a more controlled environment versus trying to test it out when you're running at top speed, full load. You don't want to necessarily do it then. You want to verify statically, and then you want to verify dynamically in controlled situations. Because once you start running the engine and the dyno as a system in that facility, in that test cell, you're taking baby steps leading up to the ultimate specific tests you want to perform and start tuning the speed and the load to make sure you're controlling as tight as possible when you're running for test data or you're acquiring test data. So yeah, to your point is we want to test to its full extent where possible, but we want to take steps to get there. It's not like we're going to hit it. We're going to put, like they say, the pedal to the metal right at the beginning and just start running full speed and full load. It doesn't work that way.
You've got to get up there in increments so that you know what to expect.
Yeah, exactly. Increments.
Because I think you've had some experience of shutdowns, which can be, in some cases, have to be very severe. And they might be actually breaking the whole system to a stop very quickly rather than just coasting down. So there are differences and different conditions when you'd need to do that.
There are. And typically, most customers are going to have a dynamometer that's more capable than the engine that they're testing, for obvious reasons. And when it comes to e-stop strategies, which is a podcast in itself, most of the time when you hit an e-stop, you're basically saying that life is on the line potentially. So it is of the utmost importance to bring that test cell down as quickly as possible, as safely as possible. So I've been in situations where customers wanted to ramp it down. Customer says, I don't care what you need to do. I need to bring the engine and the test cell down as quickly as possible. And I've seen situations where that was set up that way and the emergency stop button was utilized in a high speed condition and it broke the engine. It pulled that engine down when it was trying to go to a higher speed and a higher load, and the dynamometer basically was capable of overpowering that engine and bringing it down. So it damaged the engine in the process, but it potentially could have saved somebody's life or some catastrophic failure.
Yeah, and as we go through a commissioning process, we're looking, as we said earlier, about data accuracy, but the fundamental here is safety, and that in the e-stop discussion. So as you say, a different subject and perhaps one we need to explore, but it's something which sometimes has to be very severe because of the nature of the problem it's trying to avoid.
Right. And that's why I really value a commissioning engineer's capabilities, because they have to understand the facility, they have to understand the equipment, they have to understand what the engine's capable of doing, and they have to be able to recognize something may not be going right, something may not be trending in the right direction, and they may have to make split decisions too during the process. So they have to have all their senses going when they're commissioning a test cell, because it's a very dynamic environment during that time.
All right. So the actual, we've talked a lot about the preparation for and the circumstances surrounding commissioning. The actual process is what, down to trying different control points through using the electronic controller to set up certain conditions and then ensure that the engine and the dyno are together getting to those conditions.
Very well put. When that's done, it needs to be repeatable.
Right.
That's key.
So we can wind it back to a zero point, and then with that expectation, you can go to a known speed load condition.
Correct.
Yeah, without overrun and without taking too long to get there. So it's that balance, I suppose.
Yep, certainly is. Certainly is.
Okay, so if you're talking about this, what sort of things do you think we need to have in place to make sure of a successful commissioning event? Obviously, communication, we've talked about being a big part of this, so we all understand what's required.
We touched on it earlier, and you brought it up, is it's basically the right people in that situation from the supplier perspective and the customer perspective. So one, you have a point of contact that you're working with in that test cell. So you may have an engineer from that company along with a test cell operator. But you also want to make sure that that organization has the support services available, because you never really go through a full commissioning without experiencing some issue that needs to be resolved. So resource availability is key if you want to quickly get through the duration of time set aside for doing the commissioning. I've seen so many situations where it's stretched out for one reason or another.
And I guess if you've got, as you say, a small team of quite focused people, then you can make sure that any technical terms are clearly understood and that there's no ambiguity due to, for example, language differences.
Yep, that's key.
So we've got to make sure we know both sides of the discussion know what we're talking about and what the expectations are.
Absolutely. And then the other thing is, when you're resolving issues, it can be challenging. And again, this is where the value of the commissioning engineer comes into play. It may be a task where you're getting, after you're running and you're getting test results in, and the customers are saying, that's not what I expected. So you may be making less power, more power. It may not be what the customer was expecting. And then you get into the discussion of, okay, is this a problem with the engine or a problem with the data acquisition system or controls, facilities? That's why the commissioning engineer adds so much value. Now, I do say, though, it's important to have the right people, like we talked about earlier, from the customer perspective, because they know their product better than anybody else that they're testing. So obviously, they're the ones that may say, it's not what I expected. But you need to be able to go down that path of checks to say, well, it's reading correctly, we can validate it, we've calibrated it, it's reading the values correctly, the calculation's correct, so the value is truly what it is. So then you have to go back and say, maybe the engine isn't running, maybe it's a different calibration that was put in the engine. There's lots of different reasons, and I've seen them. I've seen it happen where the engineer thought it was a certain calibration, but it was a different calibration. It was verified once we were able to prove that the facility was reading correctly, recording correctly.
But that comes back to an earlier point you made about having an engine available. The test engine should be a known engine so that we know what we know how it performs. And typically it's got a history that we can refer to so that you can take away some of those uncertainties if they occur.
Exactly. It's a catch-22. There's two facets to this. Dependent upon what commissioning is being done, some customers want to use a slave engine, knowing that the slave engine, it's okay if damage occurs to it due to the commissioning. But on another situation, you may have what I call the golden engine, which is a data correlation engine. So it's a known quantity that you can prove that the data needs to be aligned with the data from the customer that you're recording.
I'm sure some of the companies we work with get a bit nervous if you start stretching the golden engine.
Yeah, that's for certain.
That's a bit certain. Of a precious engine typically, so I'm sure they want to look after it.
It is.
Yeah. No, that's good. I appreciate the discussion around that. It's a wide discussion, and I think the we touched on the e-stop one. I think that's something that could be explored further, because with the more complex systems that comes into play, and although it's not part of commissioning directly, it's something we've got to include.
That's a key factor. It always will be inside a test cell, because you have rotating equipment, you have certain unknowns, especially when you're starting up a test cell for the first time. So there's a lot of issues to work through, but you want to be certain you have a means to pull the plug, as they say, if something goes wrong. And the e-stop is that. But the other thing too is, I can't say it enough, is it's all the pre-planning up front, the checks up front, the verification up front that take place with the customer and the supplier that ensure the best level of success and safety when they actually start spinning the dynamometer.
Right. And also a very experienced and skilled commissioning engineer, so that if something happens, that engineer is probably going to recognize it very quickly. Any situation which may be drifting off the norm, a good commissioning engineer will recognize that and be able to help reset, realign things according to, you know, the test cell and the test cell team.
Right. And the ideal situation, like I said, would be you have the operator running the cell, and then you have their engineer there, right? So let's use it, if it's a combustion engine, that engineer is going to know how that engine's supposed to operate. Now, I will say that the commissioning engineer, if we have a commissioning engineer that's commissioned a lot of combustion engine test cells, they're going to recognize sounds just like the engineer that developed the engine would. There's certain sounds. Yeah. So if it's misfiring, you know, that can be detected, that can be understood by the commissioning engineer, and they know what they need to do as far as to back things down in a certain way to prevent the misfire from happening or bring things down until they figure out what's causing the misfire.
Yeah. No, that's good. Well, thank you for walking through that, Mike. It's an interesting subject.
Yeah, it certainly is. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for listening to Dyno Insights, presented by Frood. If there are any engine testing topics you'd like us to discuss, we'd love to hear from you. Please email us at podcast@frooddyno.com.